After Smoke and Pearly got an extra horse and tack for Sally and some food for Cal, they proceeded northward up Fountain Creek. Smoke made sure to stay off the trail in case Pike checked his back trail to see if he was being followed, though Smoke doubted the man bothered. From their meeting at the saloon, Smoke figured he was a mite slow when it came to thinking. A few miles outside of Pueblo, they came to the small clearing with the ramshackle shack that Pike had designated for their meeting the next day.
Hold on a minute, Pearly. I want to check this place out a little before we head up the mountain.
Since the clearing was on the other side of the stream, Smoke turned Joker's head toward it and gently spurred the horse out into the water. Though the current was moving fairly quickly, he found the water level to be only a couple of feet deep at this time of the year. He glanced to the sides and saw the banks of the river were several feet higher than the water level. That indicated that when the spring thaws came, the stream would turn into a raging torrent, unsafe to cross at any place. Pearly followed him across the creek and they rode around the clearing, checking for places to set traps and such. The ground rose sharply on three sides of the clearing, with assorted boulders and outcroppings of granite at many different levels. Smoke pointed these out to Pearly.
Pike told me he only had two or three men with him, so I'll bet he'll have the others hidden up behind those rocks, ready to fire down on me if he gives a signal.
Pearly glanced back across the creek to where the trail passed the clearing.
Yeah, Smoke, it'd have to be up there because there ain't much cover on the other side of the creek.
Smoke followed his gaze and saw that the nearest heavy cover was a copse of pine trees with some low brush, about 400 yards away. Other than that, the trail was pretty much open for the next quarter mile. Smoke smiled. This setting gave him an idea if he ended up having to meet with Pike here the next day.
Of course, if things go well tonight, we'll have Sally out of their camp safe and sound, and I can deal with them on my own terms after that.
A couple of hours later, Pearly slowed his mount.
The gang's camp's about another quarter mile up the trail, Smoke, so we better move up the other side of the mountain to get around them in case they got some sentries out watching the trail.
Smoke nodded and let Pearly lead the way off into the bushes off to the side of the trail. He found his heart was beating faster and his mouth was dry in anticipation of seeing his wife again. Even though Pearly had assured him Sally was all right and being treated good, he wanted to see for himself, and God help any man who'd bothered her. It took him another hour of moving slowly through dense underbrush and ravines where melting snow had washed out the side of the mountain before they got to the place where Cal was keeping watch over the gang. A few minutes later, Smoke and Pearly, along with the extra horse for Sally, pulled into a small clearing just back from a ledge that looked down on the outlaws' camp. Cal was there to greet him. Smoke noticed he had a bandana tied over his horse's mouth and nose to keep it from whinnying to the horses in the camp below. Smoke nodded, pleased that Cal had remembered what he taught him in the past about tracking men in the high lonesome. Cal grinned and shook Smoke's hand.
Jiminy, I'm glad to see you, Smoke.
Everything going all right?
Yes, sir. They've been sitting around the fire and drinking all afternoon.
Is Sally there?
Well, come on, you can see for yourself.
Cal bent down and moved low as he moved toward the ridge. Smoke followed, crawling the last few feet on hands and knees so they couldn't be seen from below, just in case any of the gang happened to look up. Smoke eased his head over the ledge just enough to look below. He saw the outlaws sitting in various positions around a roaring fire, talking and laughing and drinking from bottles of whiskey. Off to one side, a cup of coffee in her hands, Sally was sitting by herself near the far edge of the fire. Her head was down and she did look tired, but otherwise, she looked all right. Smoke thought his heart was gonna break to see her sitting alone and in such danger. He didn't know what he would do if he ever lost her. She was his entire reason for living, nothing would ever be the same if something happened to take her from him. Suddenly, he had an idea of how to make her feel better. He moved back from the ledge until he could stand up and see her through a stand of hackberry bushes. He cupped his hands around his mouth. At the sound, he saw Sally's back stiffen and her head come up. He was too far away to see her eyes, but he knew they were looking in his direction. In their years together, Sally had spent a lot of time with Smoke up in the mountains, and she knew his calls as well as he did. The outlaws all looked up too, and one or two of them shivered at the ghostly sound Smoke made. Sally got to her feet and moved to the fire to refill her coffee cup from the pot sitting at the edge of the coals. As she straightened up, she briefly let her right hand cross over her heart, a sign that she'd heard and recognized Smoke's call to her. She went back to her place, and as she drank her coffee, she sat straighter and more confident, now that she knew her man was nearby. Pike lowered his bottle and looked around, clearly spooked by the mournful cry coming from the slopes above the camp. He got to his feet and moved slowly around the campfire, his eyes on the ledges around him, his hand hovering near his pistol butt.
"What's the matter, boss? You're not afraid of a little old coyote, are you?"
Pike answered with his eyes still on the mountainside.
"I didn't know they had coyotes up here in the mountains."
"Well, it can't be Indians, boss. The man in Canyon City said they ain't giving no trouble around here in years."
"It's not Indians I'm worried about."
Pike moved over to stand next to Sally, staring down at her.
"You hear that, Mrs. Jensen?"
"Of course, Mr. Pike. It was a coyote calling to its mate. Fall is the rutting season for coyotes in the mountains."
"Is that so? It wouldn't be your husband out there signaling to you, would it?"
"Mr. Pike, if my husband were out there that close, you would already have a bullet between your eyes and would be lying flat on your back."
Sally looked around at the men lying sprawled around the fire.
"You said you met with Smoke today, Mr. Pike. Did he impress you as a man who would be afraid of a bunch of men who are so drunk they couldn't hit the side of a barn with a shotgun right now?" "I'm not, Mr. Pike."
Pike followed her gaze and realized she was right. His men were in no condition to fight anyone right now. He decided enough was enough.
"All right, men. Put the liquor away. Get ready for nightfall. I want two men to stay in the cabin with Mrs. Jensen tonight, just in case Jensen decides to try and take her without paying the money."
Pike looked up at the mountains around him, which were turning slowly darker as the dusk approached.
"You hear that, Jensen? If you're out there and you try anything, the first thing my men are gonna do is put a bullet in your wife!"
Gordon looked around at the men, who were getting worried that their boss had lost his nerve.
"Boss, take it easy. It was just a coyote, that's all."
"Never the less. We're gonna post a couple sentries, and we're gonna keep a close eye on Mrs. Jensen tonight. I don't want anything going wrong until we get that money tomorrow."
"Whatever you say, boss."
As the outlaws began to get to their feet and two men escorted Sally into her cabin, Smoke moved back from the ledge.
"Damn, I guess that means we don't try and get Sally out tonight."
"So, what we gonna do?"
"We're gonna set up some surprises for those men back down the trail, so when I meet with them tomorrow, we'll have the upper hand. But first, we're gonna make us a fire, and we're gonna eat some food and drink some coffee. Preacher always said, can't do battle on an empty stomach."
"We brung you some steaks and biscuits and beans from town."
"Oh, right now I'd sell for some rawhide to chew on. I'm so hungry."
"Now you're starting to sound like Pearlie."
Smoke and the boys gathered up all their supplies and the pack horse and horse they'd brought for Sally, and they moved off down the mountain about a quarter of a mile. It was fairly easy going, as the night was one of those only seen in early winter. Crystal clear skies, bright starlight, and the crescent moon shedding just enough light so the path through the high mountain forest could be easily seen. Smoke pulled his fur-lined buckskin coat tight around him.
"It's gonna get mighty chilly tonight, boys, with no cloud cover or snow. The temperature is gonna drop like stone."
Once they'd circled around the slope of the mountain so as to be away from where the outlaws might spot their campfire glow, Smoke dismounted.
Cal, see if you can find some really dry wood, kind that doesn't make much smoke.
While Smoke was arranging some stones in a small circle next to a large outcropping of boulders so the fire would be out of the wind, Pearly got the cooking gear off the pack horse, along with the food he and Smoke had gotten in Pueblo. Before long, coffee was brewing, steaks were sizzling in one pan, day-old biscuits steaming in another, and beans were heating in a kettle. When he poured the coffee in their tin mugs, Pearly looked at Cal, and he smiled as he pulled a small paper bag out of his pocket.
I brung you something special, Cal. Because of how you had to starve yourself watching them outlaws.
He handed the paper bag to Cal, who immediately opened it.
Jiminy! Real sugar from a coffee.
Though on the trail, Cal often had to drink his coffee black. Pearly knew he much preferred to lace it with a generous amount of sugar, changing it into what Pearly called black syrup. The smoke poured coffee all around, being up in the high lonesome, brought thoughts of Puma Buck to mind. The old mountain man, a decades-long friend of Smoke's, had been killed some years earlier while helping Smoke out of a jam.
Remember what Puma Buck said about coffee, boys?
Oh, sure do. The thing about making good mountain coffee is it don't take near as much water as you think it do.
Pearly chuckled at the memory. The boys had only known Puma for a short while, but they'd come to love him as much as Smoke did.
He also said that coffee that wouldn't float a horseshoe wasn't worth drinking.
I think them steaks are about ready. At least they quit moving.
Cal liked his steaks rare. Smoke picked one of the pieces of meat out of the pan with the point of his bowie knife and placed it on a plate on Cal's lap.
You'll have to get your own biscuit and beans.
Soon they were all chowing down, relishing the flavor of food cooked outdoors under a starry sky. After a while, their talk turned to what Smoke proposed to do about the men who held Sally prisoner.
You know, if you go to that meeting with Pike carrying $10,000, he's just gonna kill you and steal the money and then do no telling what to Miss Sally.
Well, that's right, Smoke. What you say about this hombre is true. He didn't take Sally for the money, but to draw you out where he could take you down.
I know that's his plan, boys. But planning on killing me and actually doing it are two very different things.
If you're going in there by yourself with eight of his men drawn down on you, how are you going to keep him from killing you, Smoke? Heck, far. You won't even be able to see most of them.
Easy. I'm going to have two aces up my sleeve.
I take it by that you mean Cal and me.
That's right, Pearly. And when the time comes, both my life and Sally's will depend on you two doing exactly what we've planned.
Cal and Pearly glanced at each other, sobered by this responsibility. After a moment, Pearly inclined his head.
Let's get down to planning.
All right.
Smoke moved off a short distance from the fire and picked up a stick. Using the flat of his hand, he smoothed out the dirt in front of where he was squatting. He drew a crude map in the dust and dirt, indicating the position of the outlaws' camp, the trail down the mountain alongside Fountain Creek, and the proposed meeting place.
Now, Pike and his men are going to have to head down to the meeting place at least a few hours before noon.
But why is that, Smoke?
Smoke looked at him and smiled, thinking sometimes he forgot just how young and inexperienced in such matters Cal was.
They're going to have to get there early, because Pike figures I'm going to be there early to check the area out. He'll also need to send a couple of men ahead to make sure I don't show up with reinforcements, intending to overpower them and take Sally by force.
So he'll want to have his men in place a good while before you get there, so you won't know where they're hiding.
Exactly. Once they've come down the mountain from their camp to the meeting place, that'll give us some time to work on the trail, both above and below the meeting place, to set some traps I have in mind for them.
Then what are we going to do after we set the traps and such?
You and Pearly will set up where I tell you, where you'll have a good line of fire down on the clearing while I'll be meeting with Pike, and on the places where we'll figure his men will be stationed.
What do we do then?
Come on, I'll show you. We've got to set some surprises around the meeting place tonight, before they go there tomorrow morning. Once that's done, I have a feeling you'll know what I want you to do.
While Pike was in the cabin where Sally was to be kept for the night under continuous guard, the rest of the men gathered around the fire. Sergeant Rutledge was angry, and he let everyone in the gang know about it.
I think that son of a bitch Pike lied to us about the reward money just to get us to come along on this trip. You can't tell me he didn't know all along Jensen wasn't really wanted.
Rufus Gordon looked down at his ruined hand, and then back up at Rutledge.
So what, Sarge? He told us we'd be splitting up $10,000, and that's exactly what we're going to be doing. What the hell do you care if it's reward money or money we get from Jensen?
It's the principle of the thing, Ruf. Why didn't he just tell us the real plan to begin with?
Zeke Thompson, heavily into his bottle of whiskey, glanced up from the far end of the fire.
Quit your belly aching, Rutledge. Would you come if Bill told you he intended to try and get the money from Jensen himself in trade for his wife?
Hell no. I don't know anybody who'd pay that kind of money to get their wife back. Most of the men I know be more likely to pay it to get someone to take their wife away instead of bringing them back.
And that's exactly why Bill kept his plan to himself. He'd been asking around about Jensen, and he knew the man had plenty of cash and that he loved his wife more than he loved the money. But Bill knew you boys wouldn't believe that, so we made up a little story to get you here. It don't matter a damn where the money's coming from as long as you get your share, right?
Slim Cartwright, a cattle thief and footpad from Galveston, nodded his head.
I do believe Jensen's money will spend just as good as the sheriff's, boys.
Larry Jackson, nicknamed Razor because of the straight razor he carried in his boot and enjoyed using on dance hall girls, agreed.
Yeah, and the best part of the whole deal is after we kill Jensen, we get the woman too.
Blackie Johnson's head came up at that remark and he winced. He was no angel and he'd done his share of bad things. But raping and killing women was not one of them. Besides, he'd come to like Mrs. Jensen, and he hated to think of what was going to happen to her after her husband was killed. Trouble was, he didn't have the faintest idea what he could do to prevent it, if anything at all. Sally was half sitting and half reclining on the bed in her cabin, her left wrist and ankle tied to a post, while Bill Pike was sitting across the room at a broken-down table. He was leaning back in an old handmade chair, smoking a long black cigar and drinking coffee.
You don't seem particularly worried about tomorrow, Mrs. Jensen.
Mr. Pike, when you were planning this assault on my family, did you take the time to find out anything about Smoke Jensen?
Well, I figured out he could afford to try and buy you back. I don't care a whit about the money, Mrs. Jensen. It's killing your husband that's my goal. But I need something for my men.
You really should have paid more attention to the stories I'm sure you heard about Smoke, Mr. Pike.
Why is that, Mrs. Jensen?
Then you would have learned that Smoke came out here when he was just a boy. He lived up in these mountains when there wasn't more than one white man per 1,000 square miles, and the Indians were thicker than fleas on a hound dog. Do you have any idea why Smoke not only survived in this wilderness, but thrived when hundreds of other men died in the attempt?
I hadn't really thought much about it, Mrs. Jensen.
You should, Mr. Pike. Smoke survived when many others didn't, because he is smart, tough, and when he sets his mind to do something, heaven help those who stand in his way, be it Indians or criminals.
Well, back then he didn't have you to worry about, did he, Mrs. Jensen? Oh, I'll agree that he might get the best of us if it were just him and us up here in the mountains. But we have you, and your husband knows I'll kill you if he doesn't agree to my conditions.
Sally smiled and laid back against the wall at the head of the bed and closed her eyes.
I hope you will remember, in those seconds before Smoke cuts your heart out, that I did warn you, Mr. Pike.
Pike felt his heart flutter with fear at her words and the confidence with which she spoke them. He'd never met a woman as strong and as loyal to her man as this one, and he gave a short prayer that he hadn't underestimated Smoke Jensen. While Pike and his men sat around their fire drinking whiskey and telling each other lies, Smoke and the boys traveled back down the mountain toward the rendezvous place, so Smoke could set up a few surprises for their meeting the next day. Once they arrived across the creek from the clearing, Smoke had Pearly bring the pack horse across the water and into the clearing. The moon had become slightly larger over the past week, and there were only ragged bunches of snow clouds to hide the brilliant starlight. Smoke unpacked the pony carrying the supplies he'd had Pearly and Cal buy, and he laid them out on the ground. He used a small hammer to break the top of the keg of horseshoe nails that had so puzzled Pearly when he had obtained them. He then opened a keg of gunpowder and laid out several empty Arbuckle's coffee cans in a row. One by one, he filled the cans with a mixture of gunpowder and horseshoe nails, and then he sealed the tops of the cans. Once that was done, he took an old white shirt of his out of his saddlebag and stuck it under his belt. Picking up a can under each arm, he indicated Cal and Pearly should do the same thing and for them to follow him. He walked up the steep slope at the rear of the clearing until he came to one of the larger boulders sticking out of the side of the mountain. Looking for the exact right spot, he finally stooped down and placed the can up next to the boulder where it could be seen from across the creek. He shoveled a mixture of dirt and pine needles over the can until it could barely be seen. Then he ripped off a piece of the shirt, stuck it in the dirt just over the can.
Do you think you can see that from the grove of trees where you're going to be hiding?
Pearly looked back across the creek and then down at the white scrap of cloth in the ground. After a few seconds, he nodded.
Yep, and the next question you're going to ask is, can I hit it with the sharps, ain't it?
Yeah, and both Sally and my life depends on you being able to plug it dead center.
All right, no problem. How about you, Cal?
Yeah, you might be a mite faster on the draw and a little more accurate with a handgun than me, Pearly. You know I'm miles better than you with a long gun. Yeah, don't worry, Smoke. When you give this signal, we'll get the job done.
I know you will, boys, or I wouldn't put Sally's life in your hands. Now, all we have to do is figure out all the likely places those bastards will pick to hide in, and we'll plant us some more Arbuckle cans nearby.
They spent the next hour and a half walking around the clearing and looking at it from all angles. They found several more boulders and outcroppings of rock that looked like likely candidates for hiding places, and even put one can in front of a small group of mishapen trees and brush, just in case one of the men tried to lie down in it. They even put one can on top of the roof of the small dilapidated cabin in the clearing, just in case some of the men tried to take refuge in that. Finally, Smoke was satisfied with their efforts in the area around the clearing.
Now we get to work on the trails to and from this place.
He led them back across Fountain Creek.
First, we'll go down the mountain a ways and get things ready there.
After Smoke was about 50 yards past the clearing, he got down off Joker. He took the pick and shovel he'd had Pearly buy off the pack horse, and he began to dig up a hole in the center of the trail. While he was digging, he looked up.
Get me some of those tent stakes out of the pack, Cal, and bring them over here.
In the soft, gravelly sand and dirt of the mountainside, it only took him a few minutes to dig a pit 2 feet deep and 4 feet wide. He took the tent stakes from Cal and kneeled down next to the pit. One by one, he stuck them down into the ground at the bottom of the pit with their sharp ends up, until he had the entire bottom of the pit covered with sharpened stakes.
I want you boys to gather up some pine needles and dirt to fill this hole.
Jimmy, I'd hate to be riding the bronc that steps into that hole.
The stakes are in case the hole itself doesn't break the horse's legs. I hate like hell to do that to any animal, but sometimes when you're dealing with pond scum, you have to do things you don't like. We'll dig a couple of more of these at 50-yard intervals down the trail, and there are a couple of other things I want to do in between the pits.
Smoke rode down the trail with Cal and Pearly following for another 20 yards until he came to a place where there were trees close on either side of the trail. He got down and pulled the bale of barbed wire off the back of the pack horse along with some wire cutters. He went to one of the trees on the left side of the trail. He wrapped the barbed wire around it about 6.5 feet off the ground, and then he twisted the ends together. Then, unrolling the barbed wire as he went, He crossed the trail and did the same thing on the other side, clipping the bale off the end as he twisted it.
Whew, damn, that's gonna take a man's head plumb off if he rides into it at speed.
That's the idea, Pearly.
They followed Smoke down the trail as he dug more pits and wired more trees, sometimes stepping off the trail and booby-trapping the area alongside just in case the outlaws got smart and got their horses off the trail. At each of the pits and on each of the trees he rigged, Smoke hung a small piece of white cloth.
What for are you doing that, Smoke? We ain't gonna have to shoot these traps to make them work.
Come on, Cal. You're smarter than that.
Cal looked over at Pearly, who shrugged.
I ain't telling you, cowboy. Figure it out for yourself.
Cal thought for a moment.
Oh, I got it! If we're riding down the trail with them galoots on our heels, we'll know where the traps are when we see the white pieces of shirt.
That's right, Cal. If our little surprises up at the clearing don't kill all the sons of bitches, we may have to make a run for it to get Sally out of danger. This way, we won't get hurt by one of our own traps.
Finished with their preparations on the lower part of the trail, Smoke and the boys headed back up the mountain toward the outlaws' camp.
One thing's bothering me, Smoke.
What's that?
What if in the morning those glutes start to go down the trail past the clearing? Won't they come upon our traps and know something's wrong?
Good question, Cal. I'm glad to see you're thinking of things that can go wrong with our plan. This is one of the most important things to do when you're trying to trap something. Figure out what may go wrong and allow the animal to escape. To keep them from finding our traps below the clearing, I'm going to be in the brush just below the clearing in the morning. If they start to ride down that way, I'll come out and tell them I got there early.
How about the trail above the camp, Smoke? We can't set any traps there or they'll find them on their way down.
I know. What we're going to do tonight is find the right places for the traps and mark them with white cloth. In the morning, after the outlaws have come down the trail and head to the clearing, you and Cal should have time to prepare the pits and wire up above just as we've done below before the meeting takes place.
But why are we doing both sides of the clearing, Smoke? If we do happen to make a run, won't we be going down the mountain toward Pueblo?
Probably, Cal. But I don't want to bet my life and Sally's life on any probably. Depending on how things break, we may have to head up the mountain instead of down. Much better to make too many traps than not enough.
You got that right. Though it plumb galls me to think we might have to run from these bastards instead of staying and fighting out face to face.
Me too, Pearly. But my first obligation is to get Sally out of danger. Once that's done, believe me, there won't be a hole deep enough for them to crawl into to escape what I have planned for.
It took him until almost midnight for Smoke to find and mark the various places he wanted the pits dug and the trees wired, and to leave small patches of cloth on the areas for the boys to find the next day. By then, they were all dog tired. And Smoke insisted they go back to their camp near the outlaws and get some shut-eye.
Like Puma Buck used to say, the club don't make no sense to go into a battle sleepy or hungry. Two things a man don't do good on an empty stomach or on too little sleep. Fight or make love to a woman. You need all your wits about you to do either one right.
By the time they got to their camp, Smoke had told several stories of how he and Puma Buck and Preacher had pulled some tricks on the Indians that were a constant menace to mountain men in the old days. Once at their camp, he built a very small fire and heated up some more steaks and some coffee that was quite a bit weaker than what they'd had for supper.
Probably won't have time for breakfast in the morning, so we better fill our bellies now.
You don't have to tell me twice.
Before falling asleep the night before, Smoke had set his internal alarm to awaken him before dawn. Over many years of living in the high lonesome without alarm clocks to keep him on schedule, he'd acquired the ability to make himself awaken at just about any time he wanted. Then, it had been an essential survival skill, but now it was Sally's life that depended on this ability. He blinked awake about an hour prior to sunrise, and as was his long habit, he surveyed his surroundings carefully before moving or making a sound. The forest around his camp was very quiet. The night hunters and predators had long since found their evening meals and were preparing for a day of sleep, and the daytime hunters had yet to awaken. Smoke eased out of his sleeping blankets and built a small hat-sized fire in the corner of some boulders to heat some water for coffee. Once the water was boiling, he threw in a couple of handfuls of arbuckles and roused the boys. Black Smoke, years on the trail herding cattle, had taught them to come instantly awake. They drank their coffee as they broke camp. They cleaned up all evidence of their presence and made sure the fire was completely out. Then they headed down the trail to prepare for their confrontation with Pike and his men later in the day. A light dusting of snow had fallen during the night, so they had to stay well off the trail on their way down the mountain, lest their horses' hoof prints in the snow give their presence away to the outlaws. Once they were opposite the clearing where the meeting was to take place, Smoke had Cal and Pearly move the horses well off the trail so they wouldn't nicker when they smelled the gang's animals, and then he showed them where to set up their line of fire into the clearing. The copse of trees he'd picked had enough underbrush scattered around to hide their position, and there was a fallen pine log behind which they could lay and rest their rifles on for better aim.
Remember, don't dig the pits or fix the barbed wire to the trees until you're sure all the outlaws have moved down to the clearing area. After the two dead men we left as a warning, Pike may be worried enough to have a man hang behind and watch their back trail, so be careful.
As the boys nodded their understanding of his warning, Smoke put his two good pistols in Pearly's saddlebag, and he took out a couple of older, less accurate weapons to put in his holsters.
Why are you doing that?
First thing Pike's going to do when I ride up is to take my weapons, and I don't want to give him my good ones.
Smoke then took a small folding knife from his saddlebags and put it in the inside of his right boot, along with a .44 caliber two-shot Derringer. After he'd done this, he took his large bowie knife out of the scabbard on his belt, and he stuck it in the outside of his right boot, leaving it where the handle could plainly be seen.
I'm leaving the big knife where they can find it in my boot. That way they'll hopefully be satisfied they got all my weapons and won't search any further and find the other knife or the Derringer.
Cal and Pearly's weapons were laid out behind the pine log, along with extra ammunition.
Your boys head up the mountain so you can prepare the other traps for when the gang gets here.
Smoke shook each of their hands solemnly, knowing it might well be the last time he saw them, because he was taking an awful risk in putting himself in Pike's hands. He just hoped the man would want to talk and brag and gloat before deciding to shoot him. He knew if the man were smart, he'd kill Smoke as soon as he was disarmed. But he'd never yet met an outlaw who was that smart. He prayed this wouldn't be the first time. Pike and his men began to come awake as the sun rose over the eastern peaks and warmed up the air a few degrees. Most of the men were heavy-littered and groggy after a night of too much whiskey and too little sleep. But before long, the fire was rebuilt, food and coffee prepared, and they began to feel as if they might actually survive the morning, headaches and all.
Grub's ready.
Pike looked up over the rim of his coffee mug and told Rufus Gordon to go and get Mrs. Jensen from her cabin so they could feed her.
Why aren't we wasting good food on a dead woman, boss?
The important question you should be asking yourself, Roof, is why are you questioning my orders all of a sudden? Are you trying to get yourself killed before we collect that $10,000 of Jensen's?
No, of course not, boss.
Shut up and get Mrs. Jensen like I told you.
Pike had not slept well the night before. Mrs. Jensen's warnings and apparent confidence in her husband's ability had worried him much more than he'd let on to her. When Rufus Gordon brought Sally out of the cabin and over to the fire, Pike noticed she looked refreshed and cleared eyes, as if she'd slept like a baby. In fact, she looked about as beautiful as any woman he'd met in his entire life. He shook his head to clear such thoughts from his mind. He couldn't afford to feel anything for this woman, considering what was going to happen to her after he'd killed her husband.
Good morning, Mrs. Jensen.
Good morning, Mr. Pike.
Sally glanced at the sky, which had dawned clear and cloudless after the snows of the night before had blown through.
It looks to be a lovely day today.
You think it's a good day to die, Mrs. Jensen?
Any day is a good day to die, Mr. Pike, if you've lived a full and happy life. When my time comes, whether it is today or in the future, I won't regret it, because I've been lucky enough to have had everything in life I've always wanted.
Well, enjoy the dawn, Mrs. Jensen, because it's probably the last one you'll ever see.
Blackie Johnson's lips were tight, and his eyes were narrow. He, too, didn't want to think about what the men had planned for this lady. He'd come to respect and even to like her for her courage and loyalty to her husband. He'd never met anyone like her before in his life. And he even mused that if he had, things might have turned out differently for him. After a moment, Pike looked around at his men, eating and drinking their coffee. A few of the men had laced the dark brew with dollops of whiskey, the hair of the dog and all that.
Hurry up with the grub, men. We gotta get going for long.
What's the hurry, boss? We ain't supposed to meet up with Jensen till noon.
Hank, we gotta get there and get set up long before Jensen arrives. Far as he knows, I've only got 3 men with me. I don't want him to know about the rest of you, so we gotta get you hidden before he gets there.
Sally lowered her head to her plate at this comment to hide her knowing smile. Pike was really dumb if he thought Smoke didn't know to the man what he was up against. 30 minutes later, the gang had finished breakfast, packed their gear, and were headed down the mountain trail toward the meeting place Pike had told Smoke about.
Keep your eyes open, men. Jensen might have come early hoping to surprise us. So ride with your guns loose and loaded up 6 and 6.
As they moved down the trail, Pike kept his eyes on the ground, making sure there were no fresh tracks in the snow to indicate Jensen had been there before him. Sally, on the other hand, noticed the small pieces of white cloth stuck on various trees and bushes along the way. She'd been with Smoke long enough to know his habits and realized what he was doing. She didn't know exactly what he had planned for Pike and his gang, but she did breathe easier at this sign of her husband's presence in the area. When they got to the clearing, Pike pointed at the boulders and outcroppings on the slopes that rose from the edges of the area. He pointed to his men one at a time, showing them where he wanted them to station themselves so they had clear lines of fire down on the clearing.
Keep a sharp lookout, men. Don't fire unless Jensen tries something or you see something going wrong. And for God's sake, try not to hit me or any of the other men.
He went to the ramshackle cabin in the clearing and brought out an old stool and a rickety handmade chair, which he sat in the center of the open space in front of the cabin. He sat Sally on the stool and had Blackie Johnson tie her hands in front of her.
Zeke, go hide yourself in the cabin. I don't want Jensen to see you because he might remember your face from the last time he seen you.
Zeke nodded, his eyes staring holes in Sally as he licked his lips. Before he moved off to the cabin, he leaned down.
I can hardly wait till I'm done with your man, missus, and then it'll be your turn.
Rufus, you stay here in the clearing with me and Blackie. That scatter gun you use won't do any good for more than 15 yards, so I want you at my back.
Rufus and Blackie nodded and took up station behind the chair that Pike placed 10 feet from Sally's stool. He took a seat facing her, leaned back, and crossed his legs and built himself a cigarette.
You know, Mr. Pike, it's not too late to stop this thing you're doing. If you quit now, Smoke might even let you live.
It's gone too far to stop now, Mrs. Jensen. Even if I wanted to, which I don't, it's much too late.
Do you have any family you want me to notify about your death, then?
If you don't shut up with that kind of talk, Mrs. Jensen, I'll have Blackie tie a gag on you.
All right, Mr. Pike. I'll be quiet and leave you to your thoughts.
Smoke observed the activity around the clearing through his binoculars from a bluff up on the mountainside a quarter of a mile down the trail. He saw the various positions that Pike stationed his men in, and he fixed them firmly in his memory. He knew that even with Cal and Pearlie covering his back, it was going to be a close thing to get both Sally and himself out of the trap without either one of them catching some lead. He waited patiently. Smoke faced many such situations in the past, and he had never worried about his ability to come out on top. But this time, the most precious thing in his life hung in the balance, and his gut was in knots. Finally, he turned his binoculars to the position Cal and Pearly were to take, and he saw the brief flash of a mirror reflecting sunlight from the copse of trees across the creek from the clearing. Pearly signaled that they were ready for him to appear. Smoke climbed into the saddle. He pulled Joker's head around and made his way down the side of the mountain until he was on a trail, so it'd look like he just came up from Pueblo. He let Joker walk the quarter mile up the trail until he was across from the clearing. He saw Pike and the two men behind him pull their weapons at his approach. Pike and one of his men held pistols, while the other, the one with the dirty bandage on his right hand, held a sawed-off shotgun cradled in his arms, the twin barrels pointing directly at Sally. That was going to make it even tougher to extricate Sally unharmed from the outlaws. A man under attack that's holding a pistol often can't count on his aim being accurate. But a man with an express gun, well, he doesn't have to be dead on to do considerable damage.
Keep her covered, boys.
Pike walked over to stand in front of Smoke, looking him up and down with a smirk on his face. But his forehead was covered with sweat, indicating he wasn't as sure of himself as he was trying to appear.
Give me your weapons.
Smoke took his pistols out, being careful to handle them with only two fingers so as not to provoke the men holding their guns on Sally. He handed the Colts to Pike, who stuck them in his belt. Pike's eyes roamed over Smoke's body, and he spied the knife handle in his right boot.
The pig sticker too, Jensen.
Smoke bent down, pulled the bowie knife out of his boot, and handed it butt first to Pike, who smiled evilly.
Thought you could put one over on old Bill, huh?
If I was trying to trick you, Pike, I wouldn't have had it sticking out in plain sight.
Nevertheless, I'm gonna have to check you to make sure you don't have any more up your sleeves.
Smoke held his hands out from his body, and Pike moved closer. He ran his hands around Smoke's waist and up along his shirt, and then he bent and felt around the left boot, ignoring the right boot, as Smoke had hoped he would do. After a couple of minutes, Pike stepped back and moved over toward the chair in front of Sally.
You got the money?
Maybe.
What do you mean, maybe?
I need to see if Sally is all right before I give it to you.
I could just take it.
That might be harder than you think.
Come on, boss. Let him check her out. There's no need for any rough stuff since she ain't been hurt.
You're right, Blackie. No need to make this any tougher than it already is. Go on, Jensen. Check her all you want.
Smoke moved over to squat down in front of Sally, using his body to block the outlaw's view of her.
How you doing, sweetheart?
Better now that you're here.
Smoke leaned forward to give her a hug.
There's a knife and a derringer in my right boot. Slip them out. Hide them under your hands until I give the signal.
She gave a barely perceptible nod against his cheek, and he felt her fingers dip into his boot and then withdraw.
That's enough, Jensen. Let's see the money, then you can kiss her all you want.
Take Pike and the shotgun man first. I'll take the other one.
I love you.
I love you too, wife.
Smoke slowly stood up and turned around, facing Pike. As he moved toward him, he pulled a thick wad of bills from inside his shirt just below his belt, moving slowly so as not to alarm the men holding the guns. He waved the bills in the air to get their attention off Sally, so she could open the knife and cut the ropes holding her hands without noticing it. Smoke and Pike moved closer, and Smoke held the wad of greenbacks out in front of him as if to give them to the outlaw when he got close enough. Suddenly, Smoke threw the bills in Pike's face and dove to the side toward Blackie Johnson. He swung his fist as hard as he could against the man's jaw. Smoke whirled around in time to see Pike grab his stomach and double over as he toppled to the ground. The man with the shotgun just stood there, his mouth open and his eyes wide with surprise as he glanced down at the small hole in the center of his chest, and he watched the blood spurt from the wound. Smoke took two quick strides and jerked the express gun out of his hands just as the cabin door on the far side of the clearing splintered open and Zeke Thompson limped out.
Jensen, you bastard!
Thompson was picked up off the ground and blown backward by the 10-gauge buckshot loads in the shotgun, blood coming from a dozen wounds in his chest and abdomen. Smoke ran in a crouch toward Sally, who still stood there with the smoke and derringer held out in front of her. The entire episode had taken only 30 seconds, but Smoke knew the men on the slopes above him would be standing up to fire momentarily. Smoke grabbed Sally at a dead run and got her behind Joker.
There's men on the hillside!
Smoke grabbed Joker's reins and pulled the horse along with him toward the creek. He didn't dare try to get into the saddle, but he used the animal as a shield for him and Sally. The pommel of Joker's saddle exploded. The boys began to lay down a covering fire against the men on the slopes above them. The outlaws managed to get off several shots, though. Smoke and Sally were both hit with several horseshoe nails, though at this distance, they did little damage. Joker reared and bucked against the reins as three of the nails dug into his flanks, but Smoke held on to the reins for dear life and forced him to go with him across the trail. As soon as they were across the trail and into the thick forest of ponderosa pines on the other side, Smoke threw Sally to the ground and covered her body with his, just as several shots ricocheted off the trees.
Oh, darling, it feels like you've gained weight.
Keep them pinned down. I'll grab the mounts and take them down to Sally and Smoke.
Pearly backed up into the brush and ran to where he'd ground-reined the horses. He jumped up into his saddle and grabbed the reins of the horse they'd gotten for Sally. As he rode down the hill through heavy underbrush, he pulled Smoke's gun belt and holsters out of his saddlebags. Smoke eased off Sally and took her hand. Scrabbling on hands and knees, he led her back through the brush away from the trail. He looked up as he heard horses, and he drew a breath of relief when he saw Pearly coming toward him. He stood up just as Pearly flipped him his belt and guns. Smoke buckled the belt on, and then he lifted Sally up into the saddle. He slapped the horse's rump to get it into a lope back up the hill, and then he swung up into the saddle on Joker and raced after him. Pearly followed, keeping a close watch behind him to make sure none of the outlaws were trying to cross the creek and follow him. Smoke jerked the reins, pulling Joker to a halt when he got to Cal's horse. Cal burst out of heavy brush, running toward him.
Good job, boys! Now, let's shag our mounts out of here!
What about the money?
I'll come back for it later.
When they'd gone far enough to cut over and ride to the trail, Smoke slowed the horses to let them catch their wind.
What now?
I'm gonna pay the sheriff a visit and tell him what's going on. I'll leave you in his care, and then Cal and Pearly and I will ride back up the mountain and finish what we started.
Not without me, you won't.
Now, Sally, don't argue. You've been through enough in the past few days. Why don't you just take it easy and let me take care of this?
Smoke, I had to stand there and watch two of those bastards shoot two of our friends down in cold blood, and then put up with being taken captive and held against my will for days on end. Don't you think I have a right to be in on it when you end it?
She's got a point, Smoke.
Well, I agree, Smoke. Besides, it looks like we only got three or four of them back there. Probably still four or five left. Yeah, since Sally's as good with a gun as any man I know, wouldn't hurt to have her along.
All right, I give up. But I still want to go down and let the sheriff know what's going on, just in case some of those men circle around and get down to Pueblo before we can find them.
Smoke?
Yes, dear?
Do you think I'd have time to take a bath and change clothes while you talk to the sheriff? I'm filthy.
The afternoon sun was almost obscured by the heavy cloud of cordite and gunpowder smoke that hung over the clearing on Fountain Creek like a morning fog. As the frigid north wind slowly pushed the smoke away, Blackie Johnson tried to sit up. He tasted blood, and he spat out two teeth and ran his tongue over two others that felt as if they'd been broken in half.
Oh, Jesus. What the hell he hit me with?
Johnson struggled to his feet and glanced around the clearing to see if anyone else was still alive. Bill Pike was lying just a few feet away from him, still doubled over with his hands covering his stomach. Blackie squatted and gently rolled his boss over onto his back expecting to see a pool of blood underneath him. Instead, to his amazement, Pike opened his eyes. Pike moved his hands away from his stomach, and Blackie saw the handle of the Colt Pike had taken away from Jensen sticking up out of his belt, with a lead slug embedded in the wood of the handle.
Jesus! That little Derringer kicked like a mule!
I don't know, boss. All I saw was Jensen throwing that money in the air in your face, and the next thing I knew, I'm waking up with a jaw that feels like it's broken in two. What happened?
You wouldn't believe it. I ain't never seen nobody move that fast in my whole life. That bastard must have slipped his wife a purse gun and a knife when he was talking to her. And after he slugged you, she shot Roof and me, and that's the last I remember. Let's go see where the hell the rest of the men are. Maybe they can tell us what went on.
Pike turned to walk to the cabin, and he saw Rufus Gordon lying on his back, pink froth and bubbles coming out of his mouth.
He's still with us?
Oh, he's lung shot, boss. He ain't gonna make it.
Pike nodded. He looked around the clearing, and he saw Zeke Thompson sprawled on his back just in front of the cabin, bleeding from what looked like a dozen wounds in his chest, arms, and legs.
Jesus. Look at Zeke.
He looks like he got in the way of an express gun. Probably Roof's.
Come on. Let's see if he's still alive.
As they moved across the clearing, a movement on the slopes above them caught Pike's eye, and he crouched, drawing his pistol and pointing it upward.
Hold on there, boss. It's just us.
Several of Pike's men began to appear from their hiding places on the side of the mountain above the clearing, moving slowly and looking back and forth to make sure they weren't going to be fired on again. Pike holstered his gun and hunkered down next to Zeke, shaking his shoulder with his hand.
Oh, God.
Hold it, Zeke. It's me and Blackie.
Thompson shook his head and pushed himself up to a sitting position in the dirt.
Oh.
Well, what happened, Zeke? I'm a little hazy on the details after I was shot.
Jensen threw the money in the air to distract you. Oh, and then he knocked Blackie on his ass. While he was doing that, his bitch of a wife shot you and Rufus with that little pea shooter Jensen slipped her while he was hugging her. I came out of the cabin when I saw what was going down. Jensen grabbed Rufus's scatter gun and let me have it with both barrels. Good thing Roof made his own loads, because they must have been light. Buckshot just barely went under my skin instead of clear through me.
But Zeke, why didn't the rest of the men blow Jensen to hell and gone after he made his move?
I don't know. Maybe you better ask them. That shotgun plumb knocked me on my ass, even though the loads were light. Took both barrels at one time, and it put my lights out.
I guess it'll do that.
Pike turned to face the men coming down the slope. Hank Snow was leading the way, his left arm cradled in his right hand, blood smeared on his shirt from an arm wound. Sergeant Joe Rutledge was limping along behind him, his hand holding his right flank where a bullet had pierced his side. Slim Cartwright was alongside Rutledge, his face covered with blood where stone splinters had peppered it and shredded the skin. Luckily, his eyes had been spared. Pike took in their condition with a glance, and then he looked back up the slope.
Where's Johnny Wright and Razor Jackson?
They're both still up there, boss. Johnny looks like he's been through a meat grinder, and all we could find a razor is about 8 pieces. None much bigger than my hand.
What the hell happened up there? How come you boys didn't take Jensen and his wife out when he started this ruckus?
Well, we were too busy ducking to do much good, boss. Jensen must have had lots of help, because as soon as he hit Blackie and his wife shot you and Roof, we came under a shitload of fire from across the way over there.
Snow pointed to the area where Cal and Pearlie had been lying.
Well, what about Johnny and Razor? How'd Jensen manage to blow him up like that?
This is how.
Sarge held up an Arbuckle's can he was carrying.
I found this over by one of the boulders we was hiding behind. It was half buried and the spot was marked with a piece of white cloth.
His eyes moved toward the place Snow had pointed out.
Jensen must have had somebody over there with a long rifle, and when the fight started, he just shot the cloth, blowing up the cans. As you can see, something like this explode under your feet. Oh, it'll mess your entire day up.
How long ago did all this happen?
Well, they pulled out about 30 minutes ago. Leastways, it's been that long since they done any shooting at us.
Then we still got a chance to catch them and kill the sons of bitches.
Sarge, you get over there where they were firing from. See if you can tell how many we're dealing with. I'll gather up the money, and we'll take off down the mountain after them.
We got the money, boss. Why not just let it go? After all, most of us ain't exactly in the best shape for another gunfight.
Son, if we let them get down to Pueblo, they're gonna go straight to the sheriff, and he'll wire every federal marshal between here and Texas. It won't be much fun trying to spend this money with the marshals on our asses, will it?
No, I guess not.
Then get busy loading up our mounts. We got some people to catch.
When they were all mounted up and ready to go, Rutledge came out of the bushes where Cal and Pearlie had been stationed.
Looks like only four horses, boss.
And one of them is his wife. So we're only going up against three men.
From what I could see, Mrs. Jensen could handle herself about as good as most men.
That's why we're not going to show her any mercy. She goes down just like the rest of the bastards when we catch up to them. Now let's ride!
They'd only gone about 50 yards when Pike's mount stepped in one of the pits smoking the boys had dug. Following too close to stop or turn, Cartwright jerked his horse's reins and had him jump Pike's horse in a running leap. He'd only managed another 15 yards when the barbed wire smoke had strung across the trail caught him just under the chin. The razor-sharp barbs on the wire sliced through his neck like a hot knife through butter and took his head off just under his chin.
Holy crap!
The rest of the men stopped their mounts and jumped down to see if Pike was still alive. All they could see of him were his boots sticking out of the pile of snow next to the trail. Johnson and Rutledge each grabbed a boot and yanked, pulling Bill Pike out of the snow.
You're lucky you hit that snowbank, boss. You'd have broke your neck.
Looks like Jensen laid some traps along the trail, boss. Maybe we better rethink our idea of chasing him and his friends down.
You're right, Sarge. Down to five men now. No telling what else that bastard has waiting for us along the trail up ahead.
So, we're gonna give up and head back to Texas?
Not on your life, Blackie. But we are gonna be very careful next time we go up against Jensen and his friends.